Hello, everyone, and welcome to Police Off the Cuff Real Crime Stories. I'm your host, retired NYPD Sergeant Bill Cannon, a 27-year veteran of the NYPD. Today was the first court appearance of Paul Grice. He is the fifth person charged in what has become known as the Kansas Moms case, the two Kansas moms that you see up on the screen. You know, it was unusual because Paul Grice was grabbed initially with these four individuals you see on the screen, Tiffany Adams, Tad Cullum, Cole Twombly, and Cora Twombly. But for some reason, he was let go. And that was never explained to us. But he was let go, and then subsequently, as you see him on the screen here, he's the fifth, known as the fifth person arrested in this case. And then we find out, not only is he the fifth person arrested in this case, but he makes a confession or an admission or statements. We're not privy to what he said, but he implicates himself in this case. So how much better could it be than that for the prosecution? That they have five people under arrest, they recover the bodies, and they get two, not one, but two confessions. And of course, I'm also referring to Grandma here on the screen, next to Cora Twombly, whose daughter is the star witness in this case. You can't make this stuff up, folks. That's why we always say that truth is much, much stranger than fiction. So we're going to get into Paul Grice's court appearance today and the implications of it and where the case is right now and where do we think it's going to go. But first, hold on to your hats. Hold on to your seats. You're about to enter true crime from a police perspective. You're about to enter the off-the-cuff zone, the police off-the-cuff zone.
There has to be some common sense.
Yes, sir. They have the car stopped in Tampa and Grange, Michael
Biden. We still don't know who pulled the trigger.
So, you know, today, instead of having the perp walk as he just gets arrested, we do the perp walk into court. And that's when we get to hear all the news reporters yelling out questions. And during this, he actually answered a question from News Nation. Brian Enten asked him a question, which is unusual. But he does answer a question. We're going to watch his walk into court from News Nation and see firsthand what he has to say here. This is the News Nation report from earlier today. Put it up on the screen. Okay.
Paul Grice is going to be in court today, or is in court today, admitted to taking part in the burial of the two Kansas moms apparently killed over a custody battle. Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly were on their way to a supervised visit when they disappeared. And it was several weeks before they were both found dead in a rural area of Oklahoma. There are four other suspects in this case, and they include the grandmother of the children the adults were fighting over. All five suspects are part of an anti-government religious group called God's Misfits. News Nation senior national correspondent Brian Enten is in Guymon, Oklahoma, where this court hearing is taking place today. Brian, so Paul Grice, what's his connection to this group? What have you learned?
Yeah, so he was friends with the other suspects, and he was also, according to police, in the God's Misfits cult anti-government group. So that was the connection. But what's interesting, and court just ended, when you talk to people here, I mean, everybody knew these suspects. They described Paul Grice as a family man. Tad Cullum, the other suspect, was a successful businessman in town, owns a ton of land. Grandma Tiffany Adams was on the hospital board and at one time the GOP chairwoman. We learned that Cole Twombly, another one of the suspects, was the president of the 4-H Club. So these are people that folks in town never expected would be charged with a brutal, brutal murder. That is Paul Grice walking into court just a little while ago. He's the fifth suspect to be arrested, also charged with murder and kidnapping. I asked him questions, Marnie, as he walked in. Usually we don't get a response, but he actually answered my questions. Listen to what he said.
Paul, is there anything you want to say to the victims' families?
Sorry for their loss.
Anything you want to say to your family?
I miss them. I love them.
We've learned from neighbors that he, Paul Grice, lived with his wife and kids out in the country here, was a rancher and farmer. His wife, we're told, has since left town with the kids and has said that she knew absolutely nothing about the murders. But again, for people who live in town and everybody knows most of these suspects and the victims, they're still really in a state of shock about the whole thing. There are many people who actually come to the court hearings just to see what's happening for themselves. I just spoke to a few women. Take a look.
Person. Cole Twombly was the president of the 4-H. Tad was apparently had a lot of money, businessman. I mean, people didn't expect this, it doesn't seem like.
Exactly. And, you know, all of us could have had interaction with these people at any time and never knew it. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing them charged on murder charges. And it's,
you know, one of the things that, I mean, that's her statement is that we could have had interaction with them and never knew it. You know, anyone in this world is capable of murder. Yes, I just said it. Anyone. However, the circumstances of this, like the depraved mind of just killing two innocent women and people that had no sword in the fight, no axe in the battle, destroying their lives to participate in a murder, because this was clear cut. Look, they've all been charged with two counts of first degree murder, two counts of kidnapping, and one count of conspiracy to commit murder. So it's like people that, yeah, your mailman, your pharmacist, your contractor, your landscaper, your rancher, they're your next door neighbors. Next door neighbors, your mailmen, all those aforementioned people I just listed are capable of committing murder. Now everyone's shocked, but yeah, it happens. It happens.
Very sad that this has happened. It leaves a lot of people destroyed.
So Paul Grice, who is in court today, Marnie, he said that he cannot afford an attorney and will need a public defender, which is interesting when you consider that some of his co-defendants, like Grandma Tiffany and Tad Cullum, have quite a bit of money. I mean, we're told they own thousands of acres in town. They've had many businesses over the years. So, you know, it's interesting that some of them were very wealthy. But then today, Paul Grice saying that he needs a public defender.
And when the four suspects, including the grandma, were in court last time, it was real volatile and emotional in the courtroom. What's happening in there today with Paul's appearance?
It was much calmer today, Marnie. You mentioned last time. I mean, it was really something. I mean, Veronica, the victim, Veronica, her dad got very emotional, had to be held back, was saying cuss words at the different defendants. Today, he was here again, and he was emotional and crying, which you can't blame him with everything they've been through. But he was quiet today. You know, he didn't try to lunge at the suspects or say anything. There were no outbursts.
Thank you for watching. Go to newsnationnow.com.
Oh. Sorry, guys. I wasn't quick enough to the draw on that one. So, again, interesting. So the court case is proceeding. And we all know, to recap this, this was a... the motive for this was a custody dispute between a grandma, who is Tiffany Adams, I'll put all the characters up on the screen. I don't mean saying that from the victims. That's grandma there. And those are the two victims, Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. And really, the battle was between grandma here, you see the arrow I'm putting on the screen, and Veronica Butler. Jillian Kelly worked for the courts and basically was an escort to see that the smooth exchange of the children or the child would take place. And that was her only part in this. And yet she lost her life. She lost her life over this, which is unbelievable. And we have reason to believe in the probable cause affidavit. They were perfectly fine with killing her also, because they didn't want the other lady, Cheryl Bruhn, who was the court escort favored by Grandma Tiffany Adams. She told her to take a few weeks off. So that in itself is also premeditation. Wildsy Pony, you asked, why did they let Paul Grice go and then subsequently pick him up and charge him with first-degree murder, first-degree kidnapping, and conspiracy? My only thoughts were that when the initial five were arrested, they somehow did not have enough against him. So they let him go, knowing he wasn't going to go anywhere and they can just pick him up at any time in the future, which is what they did. So, yeah, everyone's sort of baffled by that. There's some other things that we are baffled by. JPL, the Stelladoro, these people threw their lives away for someone having a family issue. How are they involved that they would have the depravity to do such a heinous crime? Well, we see these things happen every single day. You're right. They threw their lives away by getting involved in this. Sandra Breedlove, she won't get public defender. They've got money. Yes. Well, if you have, they're supposed to do a financial background on you when you request an attorney. If you do request legal aid. So yes, they will do a background check and see if in fact you fit the criteria that you can't afford your own attorney. Lady Catherine Perry, thank you, Bill. You're very welcome. So some of the things that is still baffling to me, and not baffling, but we don't know, because the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation is keeping it very quiet. A, we don't know the cause of death all of this time, and we still don't know the cause of death. I think we're all conjecturing that it very well could be blunt trauma. Because remember in the beginning, there were rumors that, they were shot. They were shot. There was evidence outside the car and inside the car of a bloody interaction. And there was thought that potentially they were shot. But then outside the car, we're hearing reports that they found a bloody hammer next to Veronica Butler's glasses. So that tells us something, doesn't it? And my other conjecture I have here is, were they kidnapped from the scene, from the car, and brought to their gravesite alive and killed? I know that there's one content creator put it out there that they could have been buried alive. I don't know where she got that from. And I don't know if she just made that up. The thought of that is so horrific. But I don't think it's good to make something up if you don't know 100% that that's what happened. Byington, they knew Paul was the weakest link, having the most to lose, so they let him think about a few weeks. I don't know if they would, if they had probable cause, Byington, I don't think they would do that. I think they would pull the trigger and arrest him. Did they want to get a statement from him? Well, Granny made a statement too. Granny may have given what was deemed sort of a confession too. This was the local news reporting on Paul Grice reporting to court today. Let's put this up on the screen here.
This noon, the fifth person accused of killing two Southwest Kansas mothers is in court. Paul Grice is charged in Texas County, Oklahoma with first-degree murder, kidnapping, and conspiracy, all in connection to the deaths of Jillian Kelly and Veronica Butler. A judge denied Grice bond. Grice will get a public defender since he said he can't afford to hire his own. Tiffany Adams, Tad Cullum, Cole Twombly, and Cora Twombly are charged with the same crimes as Grice. Those four and Grice are expected to be in court here in a couple weeks on May 15th.
So that's the local news showing his court appearance. So many people, of course, in this neighborhood. I've gotten emails from people that live in this town, and they're not happy with the way that their town is being portrayed. And I don't know if there's any way to portray a town in a positive view when five people from that town committed murder. It's not the town didn't do it. They just happened to be from that area. And I'm not trying to disparage the town, but we're trying to give our audience, and many content creators are trying to give their audience a flavor of small town ranchers, farmers, people that all know each other. And Dr. D from the chat, let him float for a while to see whom he could call and implicate possibly more people. You're right, Dr. D. Margaret DeYounger listening in tonight, making dinner. Sandra Breedlove, that boy looks like he knows he screwed up and he's just getting started. Well, imagine having three young kids. He looks like he's in his early 30s. And now your life is facing life in prison. That's going to be your life. Basically, you'll never see your kids as a free man again. Maybe they'll come visit you in prison with a microphone or speaker they're speaking into. How horrendous, right? Sherry Murray from the chat, I feel as though geofencing helped out along with a 16-year-old child. I feel so bad for all families involved. You know, Sherry Murray, that is the technology that they came up with that put the cell phones right at the location where the bodies were recovered is just unbelievable. Yes, it's absolutely unbelievable. And that technology is what enabled the police for a large part, solve this case. And we'll get into that more, but the technology, the burner phones, the purchasing of stun guns, of five stun guns, and we can conjecture what were the stun guns used for. Were the stun guns used on the scene to incapacitate Veronica and Jillian? And then from there, it was blunt trauma. I mean, we can only conjecture at this point, but we know where the car was found was the bloody crime scene. So we're just still conjecturing on cause of death. We still don't have the autopsies back. And hopefully we'll know more when the autopsies do come back.
The bodies of Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly were found last month buried in rural Oklahoma. Five suspects have now been charged with first-degree murder and kidnapping in the case. They are Tad Cullum, Tiffany Adams, Cole, and Cora Twombly, who were all arrested first. And then 11 days later, a fifth suspect, Paul Grice.
I mean, when you look at this this rogues gallery here, I mean, I guess anyone taking, it's not your best look when you take a picture with a height chart behind you and your name in front and a placard with Texas County Sheriff's Department in front of you. And that's not your best picture. It's not your Hollywood headshot, I don't think.
Confessed to his involvement in the planning of the two deaths. The motive for the murders? A custody dispute over Kelly's two children. Kelly's one of the victims. Tiffany Adams, the alleged mastermind behind the murder plot, is the children's paternal grandmother. Grice has admitted to participating in the killings and the burial of the bodies. All five of these people charged are members of an anti-government group known as God's Misfits. Earlier today, Paul Grice spoke to News Nation's senior national correspondent Brian Enten as he was being led into the courthouse for a bond hearing.
You know, I want to just stop for one second. How much, and I'm going to ask you guys this, how much did the fact that they were in this group called God's Misfits, how much did that have to do with the murders? Did it have anything to do with the murders, or it just had to do with this group of people knowing each other and be able to be together to plan something that was this devious, this evil. Other than that, did this group, God's Misfits, have anything to do with this? It seemed that this was a custody dispute that really got so ridiculously out of hand that two women, two innocent women, lost their lives over it. And here they are on the screen, Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. So yes, deviousness. Let me put it back on the screen. We'll go back to News Nation here.
Brian joins me now from outside the courtroom in Oklahoma. Brian, I was surprised he actually answered your questions.
Yeah, I was surprised too, Elizabeth. You know, we always try to ask questions when these suspects go in and out of court, especially if we can get close to them, which we could here in this small town because they walk the suspects right through the parking lot. I wasn't expecting him to respond, and he actually responded to me. He's facing serious charges, obviously, murder and kidnapping. And when you think about that kidnapping charge, it shows that these moms were not just killed right away. They were taken somewhere. We confirmed with the medical examiner they were not shot, and we believe it was a brutal killing. But listen to what he said to me right as he was going into the courthouse today. Paul, is there anything you want to say to the victims' families?
Sorry for their loss.
Anything you want to say to your family?
I miss them.
So he said that he misses his family, Elizabeth. When he came out of the courthouse, I asked him about God's Misfits. I said, is there anything you want to say about that group, God's Misfits, that police say you were a part of? That time he did not respond. He just looked straight ahead and went right to the police cruiser. Elizabeth?
You know, Brian, one of the surprising things about this group of five people now charged in the murders of these two moms is that they were prominent leaders in the community. Talk a little bit about the positions of prominence that some of them had.
Yeah, that's really the most unbelievable thing. Everybody knew them. We learned the Twombleys, the couple that were charged with murder. Cole Twombly was the president of the 4-H Club. His wife was the secretary of the 4-H Club. Tiffany, Grandma Tiffany, she, of course, was the chairperson on the GOP committee here. She was also on the hospital board at one point. Tad Cullum, very successful businessman, we're told, who was quite wealthy and owned a lot of land. And they all, like I said, Paul Grice, by the way, you know, family man, farmer, rancher, has kids. So that's why I think so many people here were so shocked when they were all charged with the murders.
I just don't understand how five people who look like they're winning in the lottery of life get together and decide they're going to brutally murder two women who are mothers out of the blue. None of them have ever done anything, I mean, been accused of doing anything like this before.
Yeah, the only person, and listen, we've been talking to people for weeks. They have nice things to say about everyone except for one person, and that is Grandma Tiffany Adams. That is the one where we hear over and over again, well, she had a crazy side. I heard a crazy story today about how she pulled a gun on a plumber she wasn't happy with. She would chase people off her property.
Wow, that's the first time I ever heard of that. I've never pulled a gun on a plumber in my life. I don't know if any of you guys in the chat have either. That's Grandma does seem like the crazy one. You know, we said one time, one of the shows we compared her to Ma Barker, you know, and she seems like she was potentially the catalyst. She was the person behind all of this. She was the leader. She got these people to do her bidding. Was she perhaps using some type of mind control on these people? Was there more to this God's Misfits than just a club that met once a week that discussed how much they hated the government? Or was there more to it? Was it more devious than that? Here you have on the screen Cole Twombly. You know, he and his wife, again, throwing away their lives to assist in this horrific, horrific crime. There they are on the screen. Tad Cullum, you know, they're saying he's a rich man. He owns lots of land. And he and Tiffany are the only two, apparently, that don't need legal aid. That's what we're hearing right now. potentially not Cole. I don't understand how Cole could need legal aid and his wife Cora, Cole not need legal aid, but his wife does. So he's going to use the money for the better attorney and throw her to legal aid. I don't mean that legal aid can't be good attorneys, but does that make a lot of sense to you guys that husband and wife, the husband's going to get a private attorney, but the wife is going to get legal aid? I don't 100% get that one. Cindy, 1903, mean, horrible people. As I have to say, because when I don't say this, I get destroyed in the chat. They are all innocent until proven guilty. Cindy, 1903, I think that, we can think what you want about Nancy Grace. I think that's irresponsible. If she doesn't know that, how does she report that, that they were buried alive? Does she know that for a fact? Nothing like that has been released. So how does she report that? I find that disgusting, Look, I don't doubt, and I think that's maybe it's D.B. Douglas, thank God these five are where they are. Yes, that's for sure. I think there's a good possibility that the two ladies, Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly, were kidnapped from the scene of the car, where they were taken from that car, and that's where you would get the kidnapping first degree. So, yes, they were removed from that location to the place that they were buried. Does that mean that they were buried alive? I don't know where she's getting her information from. Surely that hasn't been put out there, right? Has anyone from the police said that they were buried alive? Has anyone from the police or the coroner's office or the pathologist's office, the office of the chief medical examiner, has said cause of death yet? They haven't. So how does Nancy Grace report that they were buried alive? How does she know that? Does she have one of these defendants calling her from jail, telling her that's what they did? I would still think that if that was true, why? How could you report it if you don't know if it's true? It's in my view, irresponsible. Lady Catherine Perry, it's about news sensationalism. Yeah, and something, Mama Bear, California, Nancy Grace, don't listen to her. Yeah, I think it's a little disgusting. But folks, this is Police Off the Cuff, real crime stories. If you like real crime, true crime from a police perspective, then you're in the right place. And if you're not subscribed to us, go on our YouTube, hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and ring that bell. Share us with your friends and your family. Hit that like button. Make lots of comments. I'd love to read your comments. And if you want to contribute to us, we have a Patreon with three different levels. And we also have a YouTube channel membership with Canem, five different levels. And we appreciate all of our friends, our subscribers, our supporters on this channel. Fuzzy Doxy, I sure hope to God that they weren't. Me too, 100%. Elena Gonzalez, that's true, Bill. I haven't heard that. I haven't either, except I saw it was reported by her. And that's, there's others out there. I'm not going to mention names, but there's another guy out there that I think is just really absolutely ridiculous. Elena Gonzalez, yes. Let me go back to News Nation on the grandma here.
She's the one that we believe is the mastermind based on all the evidence we've seen so far. And she's the one based on all the people in town telling us that kind of had more of a crazy wild side to her.
But she must have had an enormous amount of sway over that group, God's Misfits, or at least these four members, to convince all these fine upstanding citizens that let's go brutally murder. This was not an easy, quick murder. If they're charged with kidnapping, we know they weren't shot. We know that was a bloody crime scene. This wasn't a quick, easy killing or something done from a great distance. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, and we're told that she could also be quite manipulative. So manipulation may have had something to do with it. People are very, very interested in whether or not more people are going to be charged, Elizabeth. There were more members of God's Misfits, we know, at least 12 to 15 from what we're told in this area. Did other people know about the murder?
They are telling us it is still an open investigation, so we're just going to have to wait and see.
Thanks so much for watching. Go to joinnn.
That was News Nation's report on it. You know, there wasn't much released today either that, you know, Paul Grice, the whole title of today's show was that he made his first court appearance, but they didn't tell us much about court appearance. One of the most important, and I think we've all seen it, one of the most important documents in regards to this case, of course, was the probable cause affidavit. And in this probable cause affidavit, Paul Grice's name is mentioned quite a few times. I'll put it up on the screen. Sometimes it's difficult to see. It just disappeared. That might be as big as it's going to get without disappearing. Yeah, I think it is. The complainant witness who they talk about, I'm just going to refer to this. On April 1st, 2024, Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation agents obtained a search warrant for Adams' cellular phone. And we always mention in these cases how much science and technology comes into play. OSBI agents performed an extraction on the device. Basically, they're pulling all of your calls, all of your texts, all of your information out of your phone and putting it either, I would guess, on a computer screen. Fuzzy Doxy, thank you so much for the $9.99 super sticker. Good show. Always you giving us facts, Bill. Thanks, Bill. Thank you so much, Fuzzy Doxy. So they're extracting the information out of her phone. Information gained from the device included web searches for taser, pain level, gun shops, cellular phones, and how to get someone out of their house. You know, we saw this in the Gilgo Beach case, Rex Uerman, that they were able to, which I was pretty amazed at, and all of this technology has gotten better and better since I've left the police department. This October, I'll have been retired from the NYPD 13 years. Oh, my God. It's like light years since I was a copper, you know, and from a technology standpoint. And the things investigatively they can do that they couldn't do when I was on the job has jumped leaps and bounds, especially in the digital technology arena, which comes into play so often. Video comes into play so often. Cell phones comes into play so often. Computer technology comes into play on almost every damn case. You know, the cell phone, if it's between the text messages, the correspondence between defendants, the cell site information, the GPS information, almost every case. That's what's solving the damn case. This is important. I'm going to put it back up on the screen. On April 3rd, 2024, OSBI interviewed complainant witness age 16. So we know that complainant witness to be Cora Twombly's daughter. And listen to this. Complainant witness is the daughter of Cora Twombly and Kobe White. Cora is married to Cole Twombly. Complainant witness states that she overheard a group conversation related to Butler not protecting her children from her brother, all in reference to an SA abuse allegation. Complainant witness advised that she was told by Cora that Adams, Cullum, Cora Cole, and Paul Grice, the one who had his first court appearance today, were involved in the deaths of Butler and Kelly. She stated that Adams provided burner phones to use so they could communicate without using their personal devices. Complainant witness said saw two burner phones charging on Cora's nightstand in her bedroom. How powerful of evidence is that? Seeing two burner phones and then the communication between the subjects. And then as we move on further in the investigation, the fact that two of the burner phones were at the gravesite, were at the site where Veronica and Jillian were buried and where all of these individuals who took part in the murder and took part in the burial were there. Simi Sharp, yes, it was the burner phones that burned them. Yes, the burner phones were quite important. And that's how the police put this case together. Remember, it took, what did it take? It took over 10 days, I think, for the bodies to be found. And the arrest didn't come immediately. It took a while. But everyone gets so crazy when the arrests don't happen right away. But the evidence was obtained. They did an unbelievable job. The digital evidence. And then, of course, the forensic evidence. Remember, they would only tell us that there was a bloody crime scene. Actually, didn't even tell us that in the very beginning. They told us very little. Sheila O'Donnell, it amazes me still that people Google these things thinking no one will suspect them. Sheila, you're 100% correct. And I was referring to the Gilgo Beach case where Rex Uemmann, the feds, the FBI, was able to search his computer remotely, just knowing the ISP, and they were able to remotely uncover a tremendous amount of evidence from his computer that is going to, you know, come into play during his trial, including the fact that he was still using escorts and still going out with escorts. And that's why they took the case down early, because they were afraid that he might kill one of these escorts. So all of those were reasons they took the case down earlier. Getting back to the arrest affidavit, the complainant witness described Cora Cole Adams Cullum, Paul Grice, as being part of an anti-government group that had a religious affiliation. Through OSBI investigation, it was learned that they call their group God's Misfits. Regular meetings are held weekly at Twombly's and the home of Barrett and Lacey Cook. Now, Barrett and Lacey Cook, their name comes up in the arrest affidavit, but they were the two people that were watching the children when this dirty deed was done. I don't know if you guys realize that. They were taking care of the children when the five conspirators were out doing their dirty work. Complainant witness was told by Cora on March 29th, 2024, that Cora and Cole would not be home in the morning when she woke, and that they were going to be on a mission, almost like an army mission. When complainant awoke at approximately 1000 hours, Cora and Cole were not home, but came home around 1200 hours. Complainant witness knew that Cole and Cora took a blue and gray Chevrolet pickup owned by them and a blue flatbed pickup owned by Clint Twombly when they left and returned in the same vehicles. Complainant witness was told to clean the interior of the Chevrolet pickup. Complainant witness asked Cora what happened, was told that things did not go as planned, but that they would not have to worry about her butler again. Veronica Butler, that is. Complainant witness was told that Cora and Cole blocked the road to stop Butler and Kelly and divert them to where Adams, Cullum, and Grice were. Complainant witness asked about Kelly and why she had to die, and was told by Cora that she wasn't innocent either, as she had supported Butler. Complainant witness asked Cora if their bodies were put in a well, and Cora replied, something like that. Complainant witness also disclosed that other attempts to kill Butler occurred during February of 2024 near Hugoton, Kansas, in which Adams, Cullum, and Cora went to Hugoton, but Butler did not leave her residence. This is consistent with the web search discovered on Adams' phone about how to get someone out of their house. According to Cora, the plan was to throw an anvil, there we get back to that anvil, through Butler's windshield while driving, making it look like an accident because anvils regularly fell off of work vehicles. OSBI investigation showed that Adams searched for gun shops on her cellular phone. A search of local gun shops showed Adams buying 5 stun guns at the Big R store in Guymon, Oklahoma. The purchase was made on March 23rd, 2024. And then they get into all of the burner phones that she purchased. And the burner phones, of course, had a very distinct reason, because she figures that the police aren't going to be able to track burner phones because they won't know whose phone it is, you know. And if they use their own phones, the police would know that right away. But Granny never knew that the police would have the investigative chops, let's call it, the investigative ability to find out that she purchased burner phones. And guess what? They absolutely did. They absolutely did have the chops. They did have the ability. They did have all of the things they needed to track. And they used that to obtain probable cause in these cases. And I want to play this because this shows a little bit of Brian Enten discussing the where they found the grave site. I'm going to put this up on the screen. And it's sort of ominous in the fact how far away and if they were alive and if they were kidnapped and brought to this location, how absolutely horrific.
Correspondent Brian Enten got exclusive access to the property. And there was dirt work, all right. A massive 10-foot grave had been dug and filled back in within hours. Here's what Brian saw on the night that he went out.
It's dark out here, so bear with me, but this is the area where the missing women were found. This is the spot. You remember in the police report, they mentioned a dam. This right here, this buildup of dirt, this is the dam. There's a pond on the other side. And if you walk with me this way, just about 50 feet or so, maybe a little more from the dam, you can see where the earth is disturbed, where the tractors were out here. This is where investigators came. They dug right in this area, went down about 10 feet, I'm told, and this is where they discovered the missing mom's bodies. If you look in the distance there, you can see there is a pile of hay back there. I am told by sources that hay was moved over the area where the digging happened, that Tad, the suspect Tad, moved that hay over here to cover up the area where he was digging, hoping that the cows, this is a, you know, there's a cow farm here, that the cows would come over, this is a ranch, and start feeding on the hay and make the area look less suspicious. But still, investigators were led to this spot. And again, this is the area right here where they started digging and they found the bodies.
Just incredible work by Brian Enten. I misspoke. It was not Michael Beasley. The landowner's Jamie Beasley. And again, he leased the land to Tad Cullum. And Tad Cullum asked the landlord, mind if I just do some dirt work down there? Thank you for watching.
So, yeah, it's all, you know, the whole premeditation of this, the fact that Tad Cullum had leased this land and he knew what he was going to use it for. And then the fact that they must have had a piece of heavy equipment because they dug the graves 10 feet deep. 10 feet deep, they dug the graves. And it's that was also premeditation. So I'm sorry, guys. I'm just people call you on your phone when you're live. Yes, that was premeditation. This shows they planned this case. And then how about with the putting the hay over the hole so and then have the cows walk on it so the land wouldn't look like it was disturbed by someone digging, but by the cows eating and stepping on it. So all of this premeditation, again, is something that will, in a trial, they will all have real big issues with in this trial. And of course, you know, this is a death penalty case. This is definitely going to go to trial. PG was also in a local Easter pageant, Nighthawk Minerals, which they were all volunteers for years. He was a disciple for the program after the murders. I don't know who is PG Nighthawk Minerals. I'm not sure who you're referring to. This is another News Nation report, but not on with Brian Enten and Ashley Banfield, but they're talking about the defendants in this case and what they're facing. And let me put a little of this on the air.
Back to the drawing board for God's Misfits. Grandma Tiffany Adams, her boyfriend Tad Colum, and Cole and Corey Twombly might need to rethink their defense strategy now that one of the other group members has seemingly confessed to everything. Yes, it was announced yesterday that Paul Grice, a fifth suspect in the murders of Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly, was arrested, and he's talking. According to the arrest affidavit, Grice was interviewed and admitted that he was part of the planning and killing of both Butler and Kelly. Grice admitted that he participated in the killing of Butler and Kelly and their subsequent burial. All five of the suspects face the same charges, 2 counts of murder in the first degree, 2 counts of kidnapping, 1 count of conspiracy to commit murder in the first degree, all of them felonies. Not easy to wriggle out from under those, but is there anything that Grandma Tiffany's gang of, I was going to say four, five, can say or do to get the death penalty off the table? Anything where they could walk free? Well, I'm joined right now by trial attorney Dante Mills, who I have given what the impossible task of trying to answer that question. Dante?
You know, I had said earlier when we had discussed this very topic, is there any one of these five that potentially could get out from under the death penalty? And earlier on, we had said, and Nighthawk Minerals, I apologize, use PG. I should have known Paul Grice, but I'm a little slow today. Yeah, you were referring to Paul Grice. Yeah, so we did a show earlier on with myself and professor and attorney Mike Geary, and he had said that he felt that the weakest link in this case, and this was before Paul Grice was arrested. He said that he felt that the weakest link was in this photo here, Cora Twombly, that she would sing like a parakeet. And we don't know. Maybe she did. Maybe she did sing like a parakeet. Because once your freedom is taken away from you and you realize that the life you knew with her hubby right there, Cole Earl Twombly, here's another picture of them together. That's never going to be again. Your life with your little dog there with your pickup truck, your Stetson hat, and your Fry boots, that's over. Now you're going to be wearing an orange jumpsuit for the rest of your life. So when that reality hits you, it's not a pleasant reality at all. And believe me, there are no stand-up guys in prison. Everyone will sing to get themselves out of that pot of boiling water. Believe me, there's no one that's going to say, I'm a stand-up guy. I'm not saying anything. Really? I don't think that's the case. I think they're going to be singing, or every single one of them.
Good to see you. Here's where I struggle. First, let's talk about the first-degree murder. Can they get past it? We both know that it's not just intent. There's a thing called felony murder, right? So if someone dies during the commission of a kidnapping, they could still be convicted of murder. They didn't even have to intend to kill him. How did they get past first-degree murder?
Well, nothing is impossible, right? We'll start with that, except maybe this. When you have somebody that's talking, that's always the issue. And officers know that. When investigators show up, they arrest you. The first thing they do, they read you their rights, and then they ask you, do you want to help yourself? Right? And they give you the opportunity to talk because they know how important it is. If you start going into details about the crime, that kind of locks you in and provides them all the evidence they need. And that may be what happened here.
What would a deal look like? I mean, if they're all involved in this heinous crime, would it be, hey, you give us what we need, you testify against the other bunch, we'll take the death penalty off the table? Because I can't imagine it's anything lower than life in prison or the death penalty. It's not like they're going to get 10 years for this if you cooperate.
Well, maybe, because here's the thing. Like you said, if this was a gruesome crime.
Yeah.
If they committed this crime and if they planned it, then they may get the death penalty. This is a case that the prosecution, the investigators are going to want hemmed up and sewn together completely. Their only way to do that, because you do have to show planning. Otherwise, this is a situation where people were...
Do you need to show planning? You need to show intent to kill. You need to show deliberation. I mean, isn't it enough that the phone... These burner phones that they allegedly bought tracked to the car that was abandoned by the victims, that the search history for Miss Adams showed stun gun purchases or burner phones. You have a teenage witness one of the teenage daughters.
One of the daughters.
Is one of the biggest witnesses saying, yeah, they basically confessed. I mean, do you even need the testimony of any of them?
You do, because here's the thing. Investigators can know what happened because they're good investigators, but you still have to put that information in front of the jury. So it's one thing if you...
You know, what he's also talking about is you need to connect the evidence to the statements. So if anyone's confessing or making statements, you want to make sure that what they're saying is absolutely true and that they know things maybe that you don't even know. You're just finding it out. But if you can compare their statements from the evidence that's been recovered, the evidence that's been invoiced, the evidence that's going to be presented, then that becomes ridiculously powerful evidence. And that's what they're doing in this case. And I think, you know, when they talk about how times they use the acronym MOD, M-O-D, and that stands for motive, which we have motive here. It's not necessary to prove motive. I'm writing it in the chat, so you'll have it there. Motive, opportunity, and desire, right? So she surely had a motive, and that was Granny, Tiffany Adams. She had a motive. She despised, she hated her. We could call her daughter-in-law, even though we know that Granny's son and Veronica were not legally married, but they had children together. Let's call her daughter-in-law. She despised her. So she had motive to kill her, didn't she? The others didn't. The others went along for God knows why. Opportunity. Well, yeah. The opportunity was planned, and that was premeditated opportunity. And we all know the desire was there. She tried to kill her on other occasions. She bought all of these stun guns, burner phones, planned it like a military operation. So motive, opportunity, and desire all exist there. And that is one of the things that also will make it a very, very strong case.
You want to piece that together with an investigator coming and saying, hey, we have this phone showing this and that. It's much different and much easier if you have a witness coming and saying, I was a part of it. I can tell you firsthand that I was in that room when we decided that we were going to kill this person and ultimately these two people.
You want me to throw a little curveball at you? Self-defense. You might be saying, what are you talking about here?
I'm not.
You know, because here's the idea, right? We know that a pistol magazine was found in the handbag of Jillian Kelly. Might be saying they bought stun guns. They didn't buy knives. They didn't buy handguns, as far as we know yet, right? Maybe they came to abduct them. Maybe they came to have a talk with them. But they didn't go to kill them. And perhaps Jillian Kelly started it, and they defended themselves. It's hard for me to even say. Is that a real defense?
It is a real defense, and I'll tell you why. One, it came out today that there were no gunshot wounds. That's right. Initially,
we don't know the cause of death, though.
We don't know the cause of death, but there were no gunshot wounds. That means you would imagine, presumably, they didn't bring guns to kill. Doesn't mean they didn't bring anything else, but they didn't. This was also a dispute from both sides, where both sides had words, both sides had exchanges. And you can say, well, we were going to meet her. Yes, we were mad at her, but we were going to curse her out. We were going to, you know, really be angry with her. She pulled out a gun, and we had to defend ourselves. That's why the planning and having somebody who was in on the planning is so important, because it takes away that defense.
Real quick, 15 seconds. Do you see a scenario where they're not all convicted or they're not all acquitted, but some are convicted and some are acquitted?
I see a scenario where one person spills the beans and gets a lighter sentence, and then everybody else either does life in jail or gets the death penalty.
Impossible task. I think we'll start with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't look, I agree with that. I think that potentially one person, and that one person may have already come forward, that one person may be Paul Grice, depending on what his actual culpability is here, what his actions were. Is he one of the ones that caused the death of Veronica or Jillian, or was he involved, just involved? And that's all you need to be charged with acting in concert, to be charged with murder first degree. And you heard him talk about the underlying felony. So you go, and that's what makes it a murder first degree. So they go, the premeditated murder, they go and they plan and they kill Veronica Butler, Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. And then they kidnapped him from the scene. So in that way, we know they were taken from that scene alive and moved to another location. That's considered an abduction, a kidnapping. And then in that course of that conduct, of that committing that felony, you cause their death. That becomes a murder in the first degree. So that's all of these things that we're talking about. And then they taking part in getting, basically getting rid of the bodies, burying the bodies. All of those things put all five of these individuals, as Phil would say, in the trick bag. Here's the original four. Motive, overt acts, premeditation. There's another, that's called MOP instead of MOD. Motive, overt acts, premeditation. We had all of that also. And what defenses might the suspects raise? What? I wasn't there. I didn't do anything. I didn't know they were going to do it. I was just there. I had no idea. But that's where connecting the dots, the cell phones, the burner phones, the prior communications, the computer searches, the evidence searches. Early on in the investigation, before any one of us knew, Jillian Kelly's mother posted this on Facebook. And this was before any of us knew that she was dead. She wrote on Facebook, Jillian has passed away. And then she put this up on Facebook the same time, the same day. The grandma has confessed to killing them both. So when I first saw that, it was before anything came out, I was wondering, how does this person know this? Was it a possibility that law enforcement told the family just because they wanted to let the family know what had happened to their loved ones before they had to read about it in the newspaper? So that's a distinct possibility too. And these were the pictures that were posted on Facebook. Back then, these pictures of these two beautiful women. And it really is a horrific, horrific situation. And, you know, then they spoke also on News Nation about the anti-government posts, you know, the God's Misfits, that Paul Grice had shared anti-government posts being one of God's misfits. But that's why I ask everyone, did the God's Misfits, that little club or organization they belong to, did it have anything to do with these murders? Or would they have occurred anyway without this group? That I'm not sure of. Let's play a little bit of this.
The very latest now in the case of those two murdered mothers who were found in Oklahoma, they were both from Kansas. And any time a suspect in a gruesome killing is arrested, police and journalists start combing the internet to see what their social media footprint might reveal about them. Well, News Nation has obtained a trove of social media posts from one of the suspected killers in this case, Cole Twombly. He's one of five suspects in that anti-government group called God.
Pardon me, I said Paul Grice because I know they found some of his anti-government posts also. So these are some from Cole Twombly.
God's Misfits, and now he's being charged with the murder of Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly, along with several others. Joining us now is News Nation correspondent Brian Enten. Brian, you've been going through his social media posts. What have you found?
Yeah, you know, it's been scrubbed with the five suspects, but we have been able to come up with some of these posts from the last couple of years. And some of it is disturbing, not necessarily surprising, since we know that they were part of this group, according to police, called God's Misfits, an anti-government religious group. But when it comes to Cole Twombly in particular, his Facebook posts go back a couple of years. A lot of anti-government posts. There's a lot of posts where he's worried about the government coming in and taking away his guns. He also posts a bit about demons and devils. There were a couple of posts where he put the definitions of what a demon is and what a devil is, which is interesting. He talked in some posts about the God's Misfits meetings, saying that they were meeting in town and encouraging other people to come, which is interesting considering when we were out there, so many people said they hadn't heard of the group, but apparently they did have these public meetings where people were welcome to attend. He also talked about, you know, again, anti-government rhetoric, talking about what he called controlled opposition and becoming ungovernable. He said that he was becoming more and more ungovernable, which is interesting. You know, the fifth suspect who was arrested just last week, his name is Paul Grice. Also, some interesting things we dug up on him, Elizabeth. There was this land use agreement that was filed with the court. And I want to read you part of this because this also goes into the whole anti-government God misfits rhetoric. It said, he wrote, "I repudiate and revoke my citizenship, if any ever existed, with the legal fiction known as the United States government. I claim my children as my God-given property and subject to none other. Government did not create my children and therefore does not control my children. God created my children in their mother's womb and my sperm and are my creation, my property, and I waive none of my God-given rights or duties in the upbringing of my offspring," which is interesting. Wow. That he wrote that in one of these land documents just kind of shows you what was going through these folks' heads, Elizabeth.
Do we know what this group's aim was? Were they just anti-tax? Were they anti-vaccinations, anti-school, anti, you know, any sort of local ordinance like speeding, you know, speeding laws? I mean, I'm just trying to get a sense of what God's Misfits' purpose was.
Good question. I mean, we've talked to people in God's Misfits groups in other parts of the country who say they're not even really fully anti-government. It's more of kind of like a just a more fun semi-religious group to be in. But it seems like in this part of the country with this group, they were just extremely, extremely anti-government. I heard over and over again that they followed what they called God's laws. So they didn't necessarily believe they had to abide by the government's laws, just that they had to follow, again, what they called God's laws.
All right. You've also gotten some new information this week on how these two mothers may have been murdered. What have you learned?
Yeah, so there was this thought early on that they may have been shot, but we have confirmed, Elizabeth, through the medical examiner that they were not shot. The medical examiner won't give us more details on a specific cause of death, but is saying they were not shot, which, you know, sort of leads you to believe that, that this was really a barbaric murder based on what we've learned from other sources.
Right,
that
it must
there was a
have
lot
been.
Of blood. Yeah.
Yeah, there was blood all over the car, in the car and all over the ground near the car. So if they weren't shot, it must have been some other grievous sort of wound to their bodies that would cause that much bleeding.
Yeah, and we've heard from a source that there was a hammer found nearby, which, again, is just awful to think about what these moms may have gone through. But, you know, sort of, I hate to say the hope, but people in the community were hoping that it was quick and painless. And the more we find out, the more we believe that it, you know, it was a really brutal killing.
All right, very quickly, the fifth suspect you brought up, Paul Grice, will be back in court this week. What are we expecting?
Yeah, I'll be back in Oklahoma this week, Elizabeth. He's going to be arraigned on Wednesday, which, if you remember, when the other four were arraigned, it was quite a spectacle. The families of the victims came, had to be restrained. It was very, very emotional in court. So we'll be back there this week, Wednesday morning, for the arraignment.
So, you know, where this brings us now, and again, it's interesting when they talk about God's Misfits and what was the role of God's Misfits in this? And the other big question we have, is there anyone else involved in this murder? Are there any more arrests forthcoming? Or are the five people arrested so far, is that it? Is that the total amount? And this is from a previous show you see on the screen. Paul Grice, fifth person arrested in the Kansas Moms murders of Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. So interesting. Is there going to be any more arrests? And remember, initially it was the arrest of these four: Tad Cullum, Tiffany Adams, Cole Twombly, and Cora Twombly. And we didn't think there was going to be a fifth arrest. And then the fifth arrest occurs, and that person was a person that we read the arrest affidavit, Paul Grice, who was released by the police. And that was a little surprising to us. And I don't know if I answered satisfactorily to some of you guys asking, why do you think they released him? And my only reason could be that they didn't feel that they had a strong enough case against him. They didn't have maybe even probable cause. So they let him go, knowing this good old boy would just go home to mama and his three kids, and he wouldn't try to flee the jurisdiction. And that's what happened. And then when they had enough evidence to go grab him, that's what they did. RN54, what an idiot Grice is, 31 years old, and his life is over. Yes, you could say that about all these people. Why did they do it? You know, other than Granny Adams and perhaps Tad Cullum, who was her significant other, her boyfriend, whatever you want to call it. They were the only two that really had an axe to grind, and Granny because it was her grandkids, and Tad because Granny was his girlfriend. But the other three, were they just doing a favor for Granny? Did Granny have some kind of power, control over them? Uncomfortably numb, in my opinion, more involved in the unaliving. You could be very right. You could be correct. Time will tell. Pat Wetzel. Heartbreaking for all the family and friends involved. Absolutely 100% heartbreaking. Casey's Corner, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Well, this is Middle America, and people are good Americans in Middle America. They just feel very strongly about their rights and their constitution. And sometimes, you mentioned in Middle America, taking away someone's guns. And that is like, that's not going to happen. I don't see how the government can ever do that. Fuzzy Doxy, and who's hurt the most? Those children on the day they were to have a birthday party. 100% Fuzzy Doxy, you're totally right. Pat Wetzel, I'm sorry, but I don't know where the children's father is. So sad. The father was in drug rehab. I don't know if he's still there. The father apparently was getting legal custody of his children. And Granny Adams didn't like that, even though he was her son. So you can't make this stuff up, as I say. Truth is always much, much stranger than fiction. H. Cook Wrangler is the dad. He's in rehab and then jail. I know he's in rehab. I didn't know that he owes time on whatever his crime was or whatever his sentence was. That very possibly could be. Look, this case is interesting as all hell. We look at it. We shake our heads. We wonder, how could this be? How could someone do this? D.B. Douglas from the chat. In my opinion, no one should be in love with their government, but these folks were nutso. Yeah, I think you're right. Alicia Fields, 19, hello from Washington State. I keep alternating between furious and heartsick. Who knows where the children ended up? I think the children may be with the Veronica Butler's side of the family. Social Services, Bureau of Child Welfare, Children's Services, they try to have someone from the family take care of the children, if possible, if they have a competent person from that side of the family. So to recap today, guys, we know Paul Grice, it was his first day in going to court. There he is up on the screen. And again, he was the fifth person arrested in this case that's been now known as the Kansas Moms case. The initial four up on the screen there, Tad Cullum, Tiffany Adams, Cole Twombly, and Cora Twombly. And of course, now Paul Grice becomes one of the rogues gallery we see on the screen right now. Well, folks, I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. I didn't plan to come on. I just said, you know something? Paul Grice went to court today. This is interesting. I think there's still a lot of interest in this case. We still question as to, are there going to be more arrests? Or is there more involvement in this case? And the only way you'll find that out is to keep following Police Off the Cuff Real Crime Stories. With that said, I'm Bill Cannon from Police Off the Cuff Real Crime Stories. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a good night and God bless everyone. One episode, just ain't enough.